From Capital Analytics, I'm Abby Maloney, and this is Invest Insights. Each week, we bring you perspectives, business advice, and more from the leading executives, entrepreneurs, and investors who are building, diversifying, and leading the way in the country's fastest growing metro areas. Real leaders, real insights, right now. Welcome to Invest Insights. While 2020 has presented more challenges than most were prepared for, the South Jersey business community has used this defining moment in history to adapt and reshape how we envision the future. On October 8th, 2020, our parent company, Capital Analytics, hosted a virtual event where local executives discussed how the COVID-19 pandemic has disrupted higher education and the banking and financial sectors as we launched our 150-page analysis, Invest South Jersey. In today's episode, we bring you the financial panel. Best practices to promote sustainable business growth in a post-pandemic landscape. Our moderator was Christina Renna, the president and CEO of the Chamber of Commerce of Southern New Jersey, and panelists included Albert Fox, the senior vice president and executive director of Fox, Pemberthy & Den at Morgan Stanley, Vincent D'Alessandro, the president of the Southern Region for Ocean First Bank, Robert Curley, the South Jersey and Coastal Market president of TD Bank, and Reynold Cialis, the managing shareholder of Alloy Silverstein.
Welcome, everyone. Good afternoon. As Jack said, my name is Christina Renna, and I am president and CEO of the Chamber of Commerce Southern New Jersey, the region's largest and most influential business organization. It's my pleasure to moderate today's panel discussion entitled Best Practices to Promote Sustainable Business Growth in a Post-Pandemic Landscape. But before we begin, I'd like to thank the team at Invest South Jersey, not only for organizing today's online forum, but for shining a spotlight on South Jersey. We've talked a little bit about the publication. It was extremely well done, and I know I speak for all of us involved that we appreciate the hard work of Abby and her entire team. So thank you. Joining us for today's discussion are four of the region's most influential financial and accounting leaders. I'm going to briefly introduce each of them, and then we'll jump into the discussion. First, we have Albert Fox, who serves as Senior Vice President, Executive Director, and is a founding member of Fox, Pemberthy, and Den at Morgan Stanley. For more than 20 years, he has provided highly personalized and objective advice to families looking for comprehensive wealth management strategies. We have Vincent D'Alessandro with us, who serves as president of the Southern Region at Ocean First Bank, which covers Atlantic, Cape May, Cumberland, Gloucester, and Burlington counties. As regional president, Vinny manages all aspects of customer-facing initiatives, including commercial and consumer lending, retail, and government banking. Robert Curley serves as South Jersey Coastal Market President for TD Bank, where he lends commercial and small business lending teams throughout Mercer, Burlington, Camden, Gloucester, Cumberland, and Salem counties, as well as oversees all corporate and charitable giving throughout that footprint. And last but certainly not least, we have Reynold Cialis, who serves as managing shareholder of Alloy Silverstein. Ren has over 40 years of accounting, tax, and advisory experience and provides a full range of public accounting services to numerous individuals and business entities. As you can see, we have a really fabulous panel with us today and not a lot of time, so we're going to just jump right in. So, gentlemen, thank you again for joining us. To start, let's go around and have everyone briefly answer one question off the top. Let's talk a little bit about where your organization stands in regards to the pandemic. So what actions have you taken to kind of survive and sustain the last few months? Where your company is now, and are you prepared for either a second wave or a post-pandemic world? So for this question, we're going to start with Al, then we're going to go to Rob, then Ren, and Vinny, you'll back clean up. So Al, you first.
Well, thank you for the question, and thanks for having me out today. I think by luck, we got very concerned at the end of February and sort of decided we were going to sort of test out being virtual and figure out some of the issues. And then surely, as we all figured out, it was right in front of our faces 10 days later. Now, we've returned to the office on a very limited capacity. But what we found is there's an increased amount of productivity. There's an increased level of communication. And of course, we're putting everybody's health and safety first. But as I've been told for years, right, you can't waste a good crisis. We know that. But necessity also becomes the mother of creativity. And so we've figured out the depths of our team and the depths of our clients. Mm-hmm. When having some real difficult situations, people rise to the occasion. So we're not telling that story enough. And we have a great community not only here, but in South Jersey, the bigger picture is people have stepped up. So if you don't know how to use technology, I'm sure someone would come show you. That's the kind of community we're in. So that's the way we've done this, sort of going on the offensive, because we could all sit there and be punching bags for this, and we just chose not to be. So we just feel very lucky.
Wonderful, wonderful way to go about it, Al. Rob, you're up next. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so thanks, Christina. So, you know, when I look back at this year, I have to say I'm incredibly proud, and I'm actually surprised at how well we at TD have adapted to this new world order. You know, if you had told me back in March that I would be working and leading my team from home and helping my customers grow their business and also survive this pandemic all from the comfort of my own home, I would never have believed it. I'm an old school person who really believes in, you know, being in the office and face to face. But, you know, we've all had to learn to embrace technology. Back in March, I didn't know what Zoom was. I really had no idea. And we didn't really use WebEx video very often at our bank. But I can tell you, we use it every day now, and it's a great tool. I actually feel connected to my team. I feel connected to my customers. And I think it's an amazing tool that has really helped us through this pandemic. I would say from a productivity standpoint, I think I work harder now than I ever did because I don't spend time driving around in the car all over the state of New Jersey. I'm not, you know, spending an hour and a half at lunch at Aldo Lamberti's or other places. You know, I'm actually working almost all the time. From the time I wake up to the time I go to bed, I'm working. And I think, you know, our team has had one of its best years ever from a production standpoint here in South Jersey. We put on more loans than we've ever have. Our deposits have grown more than ever. And I can't argue with how productive we've been in this virtual world. At TD, we've also donated millions of dollars, Maine to Florida, a lot of it here in New Jersey, to help our communities survive COVID. And we've really supported a lot of COVID-related causes. And then last, I would just say, me personally, it's you know, kind of changed how I dress. I wear a shirt and a jacket with sweats and shorts on down below. So it's kind of neat.
Yeah. I gotta love it, Rob. Great points all around. And I'm with you. I never used Zoom in my life until March. So same page on that. Ren, you're up next. Do you care to comment on the question?
Sure. We were rather lucky back in 2012 when Hurricane Sandy hit. We were actually out of power in our Cherry Hill office for about a week to 2 weeks. In spring of 13, we went totally to the cloud, so we haven't missed a beat. We set up drop-offs for our clients. We've met the April 15th tax deadline, the July 15th deadline, the October 15th deadline, which is next week. And we got PPP from China. Everybody's safe, we're working at home, and we haven't missed a beat, and we're still remote, and we're not sure when we're going to go back because our concern is a second wave and what happens if a second wave hits during tax season because we can't afford to be shut down next tax season for 2 weeks. So right now, we're totally remote. We have about 5 to 10 people in the office, and we haven't really missed a beat at all.
Yeah. The fact that we were all able to kind of pivot one way or the other and done so successfully is a testament to your organization and all of our organizations. Vinny, up to you. You care to comment?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Christina. I just, first of all, I'd like to thank Abby and the team at Capital Analytics for putting this together. I am truly humbled to be part of this panel discussion, which concludes you, Ren, Rob, and Al, the education panelists who essentially are preparing the, you know, employees and the future leaders for our companies. The great George Norcross, great to hear him, and looking forward to Freeholder Capelli's remarks at the end. Hopefully this adds value to our great South Jersey business community. We've had an interesting go at it. You know, we thought we were an organization that provided, you know, flexible scenarios for our folks, but we were far from prepared. You know, the strategic planning that we did was certainly not preparing us for this, but initially we put everybody remote, and we had to learn how to operate remotely. So we worked really closely with our educational partners that we work with through our foundation to find out what they're doing with their faculty, their staff, their students, and that was meaningful for us. So we had to train our entire staff of folks and came up with a certified digital banker program so that our folks can stay committed to being connected to their customers, their clients, their folks in a much different way. And we underestimate in our branch folks, and quite literally, we have about 400 people that are coming to the office every day out of about 1,100 employees. Our staff in our branches have recognized how important they are to meeting their customers, to being in the lives of their customers. And we've done everything from running drive-throughs only. We spent so much of our time meeting with our customers in the parking lots, kind of like Stewart's Root Beer, right? We have the windows down, providing deposits and whatever else is necessary. And then most importantly, we stay connected to our customers. They want to hear from us. And we have figured out just different ways to do it. And we've absolutely gotten ourselves, our balance sheet ready. To Rob's point, we've stayed very, very active as a banking organization to support the needs of our clients. And we learn from this every day.
We are going to move to a question. This one's just going to be for Rob and Vinny, because we're going to talk a little bit about the PPP loans that were so crucial for so many businesses over the course of the last 6 months. Vinny, we'll have you start first, and then Rob, we'll have you follow up. But can you talk a little bit about how your bank's initial rollout with PPP loans, how that went? How did you handle it? And where are things today on that PPP front? Are people still coming in? Is there still a need for it? Vinny, do you mind tackling that?
Sure, yeah. I'm glad you asked me the question today as opposed to 6 months, because I was hiding under my desk. We were not prepared for it. We were not an SBA shop. So we had to learn the program. We had to get approved. We had to build some technology so that we can respond to our customers. But PPP for us was one of the options that we talked to our clients about, right? So PPP wound up really good for those who got to understand it. We're still understanding it every day. There's guidelines that come out from the SBA that are new every day. Even through now, it's been out there for a while. But we've talked to our clients about getting them PPP, understanding unemployment, what we can do to provide other kinds of loans, not just PPP, you know, what we need to do with debt relief and loan restructuring. PPP has been, you know, mostly good for everybody once they got an understanding of it, but it wasn't the only solution that we provided. And I'm sure in Rob's shop, who has a much bigger, more vast, expansive SBA functionality, we had to kind of set aside a bunch of money to be able to handle the needs of our customers and those that were looking for this money from us. You know, so we wound up doing over 3,000 loans for over $500 million. And so we had to get ourselves prepared, educated, understand it, understand how to communicate and provide advisement to our customers and do that on the run. And that's what we tried to do a pretty good job. And quite frankly, partner ourselves with communications with other bankers like Rob so that we can all collectively handle this region. We just can't handle it by ourselves. We've worked collectively together.
Yeah. And you saw that in those industries, people working collectively together. It was definitely one of the positives that came out of the pandemic. Rob, care to talk about TD and how you were able to handle the PPP loan situation and where it stands now?
Sure. So yes, we are an SBA shop here in the U.S. We're one of the top five SBA producer in the U.S. But the timing of PPP was interesting because, as I mentioned, we have 27,000 U.S. colleagues. 8,000 of them are here in South Jersey. And while we're trying to shift all of them home to work from home and get them up to date on how to work from home, all of a sudden we get hit with PPP. And it was a major shift in how we operated. We had to redeploy, and we trained over 1,000 people in the bank who never did commercial lending or small business lending. We had to teach them how to view these loans, how to process these loans. And at the same time, we had to teach them how to use and learn our loan origination system and Salesforce, which were two tools that we used to really manage the process. So it was quite a massive undertaking. We had training on every weekend. People worked around the clock for 5 or 6 weeks. But we kind of viewed it as our civic duty to get as many of these loans into the hands of our customers as possible. We didn't want any customer to be left behind. We processed 84,000 loans for $8.7 billion. It was top five in the U.S. In a normal year, just to compare that, we do 3,000 SBA loans. So that just puts that in perspective. And we did those 84,000 loans in probably about a 6 week period. You know, we did 23,000 of those loans. We're here in New Jersey for $2.3 billion. So very proud of what we accomplished. And when I look back at it, it was a very difficult and challenging time. I think I was working 24 hours a day, as well as everybody else in the bank who was involved with PPP. And to Vinny's point, it was such a new program. I like to say, you know, I told people it was like building an airplane while flying it. And every day something would change. You had to shift gears. It was amazing to me how banks adapted and rolled this out. And it was very, very important. I can't tell you how many customers have told me they would not be here today if it wasn't for that PPP loan. So it's a great program. You know, it's still being developed on the forgiveness side. We are accepting forgiveness applications, but you know, we're still waiting to see new legislation, see what other changes might be coming along. Some of the other things that we did at TD was we had payment deferrals, which is, you know, if you're in banking, it's kind of an unprecedented thing to defer principal and interest for up to 6 months. That was something that the regulators and the banks worked together to provide to our customers. Mm-hmm. We did a lot of fee waivers for overdrafts and so forth. We had emergency line of credit increases, and we did a lot of strategic grants for nonprofits. So we did quite a few things, but PPP was a great program.
Yeah, absolutely. And all of that additional assistance goes so far for residents and businesses alike that were really struggling through no fault of their own. So thank you, Vinny and Rob, for your organization's great work. So the next question is going to go to Ren and Al. Ren, we'll have you address this first, and we'll hear from Al. From where you stand, how are the financial and tax sectors balancing the impact of the pandemic while still keeping an eye on some of those larger themes that impact markets, like an election in less than a month now or industry restructuring as a result of the pandemic? I'm curious your thoughts on the impact and how the pandemic is kind of playing and intertwining with these other larger forces. Ren, do you mind taking that first?
Okay, right now I think it's business as usual. We're used to elections every 4 years. We're used to major tax law changes. Mm-hmm. After the election, we'll be doing planning through the end of this year, depending on what we think will happen in 21. I think the major concern right now is getting our clients to the year 2022. So what we're finding is we're doing more cash flow projections and helping clients and doing more advisory services, because over the last 8 months, clients found out the difference between a tax preparer and a tax advisor or a business advisor. Mm-hmm. So during the last 8 months, the low cost provider didn't necessarily help them navigate through the PPP field or any of the other problems they're having. And over the next few months, we'll be helping our clients go through the maze of PPP forgiveness.
And it is a maze.
It's a maze.
That's a good term you used, Trent. Al, can I care to chime in on this question? What are your thoughts?
Sure. I need an hour, but I know I don't have an hour.
So we have about 10 minutes, but...
I want to actually pick up where Ren left off, because the thing that comes top of mind to me is pre-event planning. And so I think the things people learn when they go through a situation like this, if you look back over history, yes, COVID is tragic and it's a pandemic and it affects everybody. But you look back at history, this is nothing new. There are events that happen in the world. There are unfortunate events. They disrupt markets. They disrupt people's plan. They disrupt people's retirement. They disrupt where they thought they were going to be. And so I think the real takeaway for everyone is pre-event planning. Are you looking at worst case scenarios for your business, for your personal situation? What can happen under a really, really bad scenario? And do you have something built that weathers through that? And if you don't, what changes do you need to make sure that you can survive that and thrive? Where we've seen a lot of people struggle is they think that something goes on forever. So specifically for me, they think a good market goes on forever. History will tell all of us that's not the case. And everybody thinks they have one more hour in it or one more week in it. But we tend to find that a best offense is really a great defense. And perfect, and we all know this because timing's part of life, perfect is the enemy of really, really good. And I'd like to encourage our community, right, to bring a new element of their thinking. And again, Ren talked about this. What's time look like 6 months from now? What's it look like 6 years from now and everything in between? And laying out for yourselves how that could potentially affect you positively and negatively so there's no surprises.
Right.
And I think that's probably the biggest takeaway, I think, for the business community.
Yeah.
As we're all learning together and information comes at us so fast, we all need to just take time to digest it. And one other comment to Rob's point of working 24/7. All of us need to be mindful. Right? We have to take care of ourselves. So 24/7, while it's an easy habit to fall into and we're all engaged all the time, sometimes we do our best work when we take a step back and we look at what it is we're actually solving for and how we need to get there. So Christina, thank you for the question. And I hope that added something.
No, absolutely, Al. Thank you so much. I think that was a great response. So we had a question come through in the chat. We have about 5 minutes left. So I'm going to toss it out there and see who would like to answer it. The question that came through was, what is being done to attract both domestic and international venture capital funding to startups in South Jersey? Who would like to take that?
I think in a very, very low interest rate environment, people chase return and they chase return everywhere. So if people think that South Jersey is a great community to do private equity or invest in real estate or start a business, and the cost of capital is right, I think that's really what fuels this, is such a low interest rate environment. That's the first piece of the question. But I suspect the three of you have more to add.
Yeah, I would just say, you know, prior to the pandemic, there's quite a bit of money out there to invest. And I think we just have to continue to promote South Jersey like we are today as a great place to do business. I mean, I think that's what it takes. You know, I think we often get overlooked as being part of New Jersey, but we have a lot to offer. And I think we need to promote all the things that we have: transportation, access to great roads, you know, land for building distribution and all that good stuff. So I just think it's about promotion and getting people to invest here in South Jersey. And I think it's one of the things we've seen is a lot of people from the New York market are investing here in South Jersey, both in commercial and in residential. You know, it's just a matter of telling our story.
I think that's great. Gentlemen, we're going to jump to one final question. I'm actually going to pose this to Ren and Vinny since they didn't chime in on the last question, but anyone feel free to jump in. Because actually, Al spoke to this a little bit. You know, from your perspective, what is going to be the most important keys for the business community here in South Jersey to recover? And as I said, Al talked about some of the long-term planning that needs to happen. But I think the second part of this question is actually a little bit more interesting, which we have not touched on yet, which is, which economic sectors would you say or you believe are poised for future growth here in South Jersey, even in this pandemic world that we're living in?
I think it depends. Every industry will have a different answer. Mm-hmm. I'm not a person who right now would want to own a restaurant, but I would love to own, or I wouldn't want to own a restaurant or a gym until you can go in without a mask. But I would love to own a golf course right now because the golf courses are up 20%. You have to look at each individual industry and see what they are going to do and how adaptive the owners are. The more adaptive they are, they'll be able to reap some benefits. You know, I wouldn't want to own a commercial real estate right now because everybody in the world is rethinking whether or not they're going back into an office. And if they have an office, how much space they don't want.
Very true. Great point, Ren. Vinny, you want to follow up on that?
Sure. You know, at Ocean First, we're a small business ourselves, right? So one of the things that we're doing is spending time understanding what our resources are. We're communicating to our business operators to say, listen, we're having hard conversations about understanding where are your resources? What capacity do you have to reinvent yourself? What do you have that you can bring diversity into your revenue mixes and your sources of getting your ability to, you know, cut your costs and spend time making your operations more efficient? So the thing that I always push is the relationship that they should be having with all of their professionals, right? They should be dealing with their selfishly, with their bankers, with their CPAs, with their investment specialists, their attorneys. And quite frankly, we're pushing our companies to have conversations with their peers. You know, they talk to us about what we see with other companies that have been working, what hasn't been working. And so we've been really acknowledging the important role that, you know, the local chambers are playing in terms of providing up-to-date understanding of where the business environment is going, what the trade groups have to add to their value. And to Ren's point, there's quite a few businesses that you would shy away from. But in South Jersey, where land development and proximity to the ports in Philadelphia, really good warehousing to support the internet activities online. You know, the real estate is quite vast and there's some opportunities there. So we look forward to working with our clients in expanding the footprint down here. As the exodus out of the cities has taken place, it's giving, you know, South Jersey a fresh sense of identity of where there's some opportunities.
It's absolutely a great point to end on. So gentlemen, our time is up. So I want to thank all four of you for taking time today to join us for this really critical conversation. We touched on a lot of the, I think, the high points here that impact not just the financial institutions here in South Jersey, but they impact all of us, residents, businesses alike. So thank you so much for spending time with us. Thank you again to the Invest team for this opportunity. And I think at this point, I will kick it back over to Invest.
You have been listening to Invest Insights. Be sure to follow, rate, and review this podcast to hear more. I'm Abby Malone. Thank you for tuning in.